You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Ward 4, City Councilman Paul Cunningham seeks another 4 years on the City Council of Tucson. I ask you to support him. He's been an amazingly effective council person. He joins us now. Welcome, Paul. I'm glad you're with us. Thanks.
John, thanks for having me on. It's been a long time. Yep. I've got one quick issue.
Yep.
I'm actually Ward 2.
Oh, Ward 2. I apologize for that. Listen, Ward 2, obviously on the east side of the city, has all the problems I think that all the wards have. But let me ask you about the Sanctuary City thing. Is that a threat, literally, to the city of Tucson if voters say yes to make this a sanctuary city? How much of a threat is that to all of us, Paul?
I don't know if it's a threat per se. What my biggest issue is my biggest concern on that one is that we have 26 police positions and another $12 million federal dollars, which I think would be at risk. I think it'd be more at risk than we think. And a lot of people will say, well, you know, no one has gotten their federal funding yanked. And that's true, but it's not a matter of getting it yanked. It's a matter of when you apply for federal money and you kind of get denied. So those are where my concerns lie within this. I think the spirit of welcoming immigrants and being a welcoming place and being that house on the hill that Ronald Reagan talked about, that the Kennedys talked about, I think that's important. And so philosophically, there's a lot of things right there. But the problem is I wish that the organizers would have approached us. We probably could have written probably a more responsible piece of legislation or more responsible ordinance for something like this.
It looks like the business community is going to come forward and put some money up to try to defeat it because they're apprehensive about how that will affect literally not only the image of Tucson, but its financial stability as well. So we're going to have to watch that unfold.
Yeah. Well, that $14.5 million into law enforcement is something that you can't trifle with that.
No, you can't.
It's not worth it. We're already struggling to hire people as fast as we can. I mean, it's not a matter of putting the money and making it a priority. It's a matter of being able to graduate 105 candidates without attritioning out our annual 60 people for a net of 45 officers a year. That's if everything breaks our way. That means that we fill every single academy three times with 35 officers and all 35 graduate. That isn't happening. We're screening 200, 300, 400 applicants and only 29 or 30 are even getting into the academy and only 23 or 24 are graduating. So right there, it's a struggle to net 20 per year. I'd like to phase it in. We also have a new program called CSOs, which are community service officers. They're not necessarily commissioned, but they answer some of those low priority calls, fender benders and cats and trees and things like that. And so I think if we can increase that duty, no more than 10% of the commissioned ranks, but I think we can get to 911 police officers and 91 CSOs. That'd be over 1,000 personnel answering calls by the end of the next calendar year of December of 2020. That's the goal I want to set for Tucson. The money's there. The math works. The budget works. And I want to make that happen in the next year.
You know, I have said over the last almost year on this radio talk show that I believe that the city of Tucson's people have said yes to this city council because they have confidence in the city council and the mayor. They said yes to more taxes for better roads. They said yes to more taxes for better parks. They said yes over and over again. I think that's a referendum on the city council. The city council is going to change. There's going to be new faces. Are you apprehensive about the new look of the city council compared to what I thought was a favorable feeling of the people of Tucson about the council as it existed now, which will not be its existence going forward?
Well, I mean, I'm not anytime there's change, people either welcome it or people poo-poo it. It's really whether or not you win them over by your actions. We've been fortunate enough to have some significant economic growth in the last 5 years. We've been fortunate enough to basically 180 the corridors. Remember, we were at 80% failing corridors 5 years ago, and now we're about 80% not failing or 80% above average corridors. So those are the things that we've done, not to mention all the work we did into the parks. you know, we passed that parks ban bond, but we had some surplus money that we could start spending a little early on it. We've already done the first phase of projects. We're almost a year and a half ahead on that program. On the east side, I had the Broadway East project. I literally stopped voting for east side road, for any RTA road projects, until my Broadway East project broke ground. And even though it got delayed a little bit this summer with the rain and with CenturyLink moving their utility lines underground, we're still going to be at least a year ahead when we complete the thing. So I'm pretty happy all the way around with those actions. That's how you build confidence in voters, and you build confidence so we'll be able to do it. I'm willing to work with whoever's there, and we're just going to keep building this city one community at a time.
Paul Cunningham, Ward 2, City Councilman. Udall Park is your park. How did it become your park? You just got it deeded over to the city. Who owned the park before that? What was that? So, I don't understand that.
Okay, so Udall Park was endowed through the Bureau of Land Management, the United States Bureau of Land Management, and it was endowed with BLM land, or federal land. It was part of the Federal Land Trust when we dedicated it as Udall Park. Well, BLM held a patent on that park ever since it was first built, ever since the ribbon was cut. And as a result, there were restrictions on that park that we didn't have on other parks. You couldn't do farmers markets. You couldn't do merchant fairs. You couldn't do a significant number of things. And every so often it would come up, well, the land patent doesn't allow this, and you can't do any swaps. You can't do anything without the federal government's approval. And really, it was totally unnecessary, because the whole aim of the land grant from BLM originally was for parks and recreation. It should be a city owned entity. And so we clean that up. Credit goes to Raul Grijalva and to Congresswoman McSally and to Congresswoman Kirkpatrick and to Congressman Barber, because they all helped in that process. And then finally Senator Sinema kind of closed the deal for us in the Senate. And they all helped in that process. So that was part of a budget omnibus package, and buried, you know, in line 583 of page 217 or whatever it is, there's a little carve out about the Udall, the Udall Park land patent. And we got that through the House and Senate. So I'm pretty happy about that. And it definitely opens the doors for Udall. It's going to allow us to do some of the bond packaging. We'll be able to expand the dog park. We'll also be able to more than likely put in a splash pad for the kids at that park someday. So I think that's pretty exciting, and I'm really proud. The last thing it's really going to help is youth soccer. Some of the land patents kind of barred FC Tucson from doing some expansion on the east side, so I think that's important too.
Well, that is such a strategically located park. It's on the main thoroughfare of Tancredi all the way out to the east side. It's convenient to literally thousands and thousands of people, and now it's going to be a much greater multiple use facility than it ever has been before.
Well, I mean, it's one of the four basically regional parks in Ward 2. Since I've been on the council in Ward 2, every single regional park we have upgrade. In Udall Park's case, it got a brand new playground, it got a brand new parking lot, it got solar panels, and it got two soccer fields. That all happened in the last 6 years, 5 years. The Jesse Owens Park was completely renovated. We covered two of the playgrounds. We put shade structures for the viewing stands for the parents for both Little League softball and baseball. We added a legend soccer field. We added a football field, and we covered the basketball court to make it one of the first open air basketball courts in Ward 2. Not only that, former Arizona basketball standout Corey Williams actually got some of the money donated. It was through public private partnerships with Tucson Water. It wasn't just all impact fees and taxpayer money that got all that done at Jesse Owens Park. Then over at Fort Will Park, we put the loop through. It's on its way to getting a new, it's on its way to getting a new pool. So I'm pretty excited about those things at Udall Park. And finally, the big thing that happened at Udall Park is we got all the historic places situated west of Craycroft. So Udall Park got a substantial influx. Excuse me, Fort Will Park got a substantial influx of capital during my term. And finally, the last one is Palo Verde Park. Palo Verde Park just this summer got a brand new parking lot. It got its pool completely renovated, and the best part is it got the first splash pad in a word too. And we did that because we wanted to deliver to Tucson. We wanted to deliver to our constituents, and that's how you do these things. Look, we're as good as our parks sometimes. If we have kids and parents having the opportunity to interact with each other, we have families having the opportunity to interact with each other, they can do that in parks. If parks are safe, then that's what can make our community as good as it can. And so I'm a big fighter for those things.
Yeah, and you've been very successful. I congratulate you on that. And I think one of your legacies is going to be what happened with High Corbett Field, home now of the University of Arizona Wildcat baseball team. That's such a comfortable place to go to be a great Wildcat fan of their baseball program, which is legendary. What's going to happen, do you think, with the golf facility there? How can you improve that to make it state-of-the-art and bring some of these great names back to Tucson? Is that possible? Can you get that done?
Well, I mean, it takes a village to take that kind of undertaking on. I think a lot of that it rests on, actually squarely on, the shoulders of both the city manager and the president of the university. And I think they're going to end up quarterbacking this thing together. I think they're going to be like Ortiz Jenkins and Keith Smith back in the day when we had two really good quarterbacks. And I think they're going to be able to get this done. It's basically going to be a situation where my hard ground is this, and I think everybody's amenable to it. No matter what happens, it's not a full exclusivity deal. It's still a community golf course. It's still owned by the city. It's still operated by the city. But on certain days, maybe only a few times a year, a few choice days a year, you may see the Pac-12 championship out there. You may see the Wildcat Invitational out there. And you will see every day the University of Arizona men's and women's golf teams out there, because it's only going to be about 5 minutes from campus, which is what our big selling point is. And if we're able to get this influx in cash and able to do the things to the course that will make it special, we'll have one of the best golf courses in the Western United States. Look, we're never going to be in Pebble Beach or Torrey Pines or Tacoma Hills. We're never going to be those courses. They're special public courses that are in a league of their own, if you will. But we can have we do have one of the most traditioned municipal golf course enterprises in the country, and we need to build on that tradition. Hey, you know, that golf course has been open since 1925. It really hasn't had a big makeover since probably the mid-80s. So we're probably ready and primed to give it a once-over. The North Course has some length. It has a couple of nice holes, but we need to add some water hazards, a couple of dog legs, and lengthen a few holes to make it a championship-caliber course. And that unfortunately takes a significant amount of revenue. And I think by partnering with the U of A, it opens the door for that. It's a win-win because the U of A now can sell their golf program better. It's a lot easier to tell a recruit, hey, the golf course is 5 minutes away, rather than, hey, you've got to drive an hour and a half round trip to the golf course every day.
You know, Paul Cunningham, you've become one damn good councilman. In the very beginning, I thought, well, I don't know how this is going to work out. You grew into this job, didn't you? I mean, seriously.
Well, I mean, I was lucky enough to have my parents and my wife who are supportive of me, and now my kids. You know, my oldest, when I first took this job, was only 7 years old, and now he's 16 years old.
Wow.
And he's he's running for student body president of Rincon High School this year.
Wow, so it's a family tradition.
Well, you know, believe it or not, my dad was class president of Catalina in 63, and I was class president of Rincon in 92, and now my son's there. So there's some cool things, but I was just lucky to have a support system. I was, you know, my grandmother passed away about 4 years ago, but she got to see me do my job the first 4 years, and I have a very blessed and wonderful life. I've got a great support system, and as a result, I think I found out what, you know, obviously my number one love is family and spouse and all that, but I think the other thing that I'm married to, the thing that I'm a fan of, is more than the Wildcats and more than, you know, more than the Phoenix Suns and more than even the Tucson Toros back in the day. I went to every Toros game as a kid. But the thing that I'm really the number one fan is, I'm the number one fan of Tucson, Arizona. I love the city of Tucson, Arizona, and nothing brings me more pride and just fulfillment than seeing our community strive.
Well, you walk in great footsteps. As you know, your father was the aide to the Senate president when I was in the state Senate, and he used to beat the crap out of me in tennis. I never forgave him for that. But he became a great state senator himself. He was the budget director for Janet Napolitano when she was governor. He won the respect of both parties, both sides of the aisle when he was there. And he's a remarkable individual, founding the Grand Canyon Institute, one of the great think tanks in America. I just love your father to death. I have the greatest admiration for his intellect and for his sacrifice for Arizona, as I do for you. Paul, thanks for being on the show. I appreciate it. Good luck. We urge people to support you in another four-year term on the City Council. We're much better off because you're there. Thank you.
John C. Scott, thanks for having me on, and have a great weekend, sir.
We'll do so. Thank you very much. Paul Cunningham, Ward 2. I don't know why I said Ward 4. I don't know. 2-4, the East Side Wards, but Ward 2 is the council offices of Paul Cunningham. You know, Tucson Map and Flag announces concierge service. Tucson Map and Flag store that Tucsonans grew to love is now closed. You probably know that. Tucson Map and Flag is open during business hours, though, on your phone. Call Charles Smith, the American flag expert, at 887-4234. Give me the number again. 887-4234. Order your American-made American flag at a great price. Almost any size is available, and travel maps to most of the world are available as well. Now, concierge service of Tucson Map and Flag, just a phone call away. Call Charles Smith at 887-4234. 887-4234. Place your order. Tucson Map and Flag, sharing your pride in America with the display of America's most cherished symbol. Call 887-4234. This portion of the John C. Scott Show originates from the Perfection Auto Works studios. Back in a moment. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Political Forum. The one thing about doing this show for all these years is I get to talk to some of the smartest people on the face of this earth. I get to talk with people who have expertise far beyond anything I've ever known about their, well, level of expertise. One of those is David Sevier, who is an educator, a longtime teacher, and now an expert and writer on education. He's the writer for the Weekly on Education, and he's a regular on our show, and it's so good to talk with him. And David, welcome to the show. I'm so glad you could be with us. Thank you.
Hi, John. Pleasure to be here.
All right. Let me argue with you a moment. I've always said, you know, if we could just keep the TUSD, Tucson Unified School District 1 School Board, out of the controversial crap and just do reading, writing, and arithmetic, the students will come back, we can stop the attrition, and we can build this district into really what it used to be. Maybe not as big as it used to be, but as good as it used to be. And now we get into the sex thing, and we turn it into, you know, a war over philosophy of diversity and whatever, and we're not talking about reading and writing and arithmetic. We're talking about sex, and that just pisses people off. What the hell is this board doing, and should they be doing it, David?
Yes, they're doing the right thing, and they should be doing it. But they're involved in something that I'm not sure that everybody who has been following this in Tucson understands. They're involved in something that is a statewide and nationwide and to some extent a global controversy. And if you compare it to, say, something like abortion, and everybody knows what a hot button issue that is, people don't realize maybe what a hot button issue sex ed is. And so there's a big problem. This is coming from the state. It's coming from people in the legislature. It's coming from a woman in Gilbert, Arizona, who is feeding the flames of anti-sex ed sentiment down here, which is real, but they're feeding that sentiment. The thing is, John, that students need to know that there's more than abstinence to ways to combat pregnancy. They need to know there are things like birth control, and they didn't know that. They're not being taught that. And students don't pick that up on the streets until sometimes, and it's tragic, a girl comes to a principal. I just saw this the other day in the paper, and says to the principal, "I was told that I couldn't get pregnant the first time I had sex. Will you please help me tell my parents that I'm pregnant?" Because she got this bad information. This is very, very, very important. The other thing that's very important is that we used to have a bill here. I don't know if it's a bill or exactly what it is, that said that you couldn't say anything in school which promoted a homosexual agenda. Well, that means talking about it normally and rationally. If you say there are people who are LGBTQ in this state and in this school and among parents and things like that, that's incredibly important, inclusive education, and yet we were forbidden from doing that. So what TUSD is doing, rightly, is trying to bring it back up into where it needs to be now in the world that we have now with the kids we have now, to help prevent STDs, to help prevent pregnancy, and to help prevent the kind of homophobic crap that goes on that causes people who are gay and lesbian and trans to feel that their life is worthless and they themselves are worthless, and horrible things happen to people because of that. So yes, it's absolutely important.
Well,
one thing I'll say here is that we've got to be ready for this to be one of the big agendas coming in the 2020 election in Arizona, because immigration right now is kind of fading. It's kind of Trump, anti-Trump, but it's no longer the issue that it was a few years back in Arizona. They are going to be jumping on the sex ed bandwagon big time, and some of them have already started. House Speaker Russell Bowers, the Republican, and Senator Sylvia Allen, the Republican, are part of this anti-sex ed, anti-comprehensive sexual education movement, and they are trying to create new legislation in the next session that will clamp down on this and make it a real hot button.
Well, what do? You introduce a bill called Welcome to Ignorance. What do you call that? Let's be stupid.
You call it protecting our children. I mean, I'll tell you this. There's this woman, Sharon Slater, in Gilbert. Gilbert is one of the suburbs of Phoenix, somewhere near Tempe in that area. And this woman is a heavy hitter. This woman started a group called the Family Watch International and Global, helping to advance women and children. This got an international reputation. She talks all over the world, anti-gay. She works in Africa with some of the worst, most virulent anti-gay activists, helping to create programs that make sure that nobody decriminalizes homosexuality, because in lots of African countries it's not only frowned upon, but it's criminal to practice or to be found practicing homosexuality. She works with that. She has all kinds of groups, all kinds of organizations. She works with Russell Browers and Sylvia Allen, who went to one of her meetings that was just, they did a video of it, and I watched the whole thing. It was frightening to me. They put out a 10-minute video. They put out a pamphlet that they sent to Latino households, specifically people who were involved in churches, about how horrible the sex education program is. Emails have been sent out, and they're ginning up just incredible anti-sex ed fervor among a small group of people, often church people, often senior citizens. In this case now, a lot of it is in Latino church communities, to create a controversy over something which is just, in my opinion, something that we need to be doing in school. And one thing I'll tell you, this is something that's missed by a lot of people. Nobody whose parents don't want them to be in the sex education program will be in it, because it is an opt-in program. Opt-out means you've got to say, I don't want my kid in there. Opt-in means a parent has to specifically say, I allow my child to be in the sex education program. So these people are saying, not only don't I want my children to learn this, but I don't want your children to learn this either. John, that's just limited and narrow, and it's something that we can't allow, and we can't sit back and say, well, it's bad for the district to do this. You can't do that. Other districts have done it. TUSD is doing it now, but right now is the moment before the election that TUSD is back in a situation like it was. Remember the Mexican-American studies controversy?
Sure.
That was ginned up at the state level. This one is being ginned up at the state level as well.
Well, here's the deal. Obviously, A lot of lives would have been changed, mine included, had sex education shooting been a part of the 1960s a high school experience that I had, and a lot of other people had as well, or didn't have, for that matter. But look at where we are now. There is more information available to any human being, no matter how old or how young, doesn't make any difference, available to them than ever before on their phone, on their computer. Thousands and thousands of words, millions of pictures, all kinds of ways to find out about sex. And is that really where you want your child to be educated? Seriously? You want your child to have a sex education from the computer? Really? You want them to go to a porn site? Is that what you want? Because it's right there for them. We've got to be more aware of what we are today than what we were when you and I were growing up. We have to be, because it's a different world. But the challenges are the same, David, as you and I both agree.
Right.
Go ahead.
And the problem is that kids are getting things from their misinformation from their friends, and you and I remember as teenagers all the wonderful things we were told by friends who pretended to be experts and didn't know one side of sexual education from the other.
Right.
And they're getting it from that, and they're getting it from porn sites and things of this nature, which present sexuality in odd ways, not in the ways that normal people practice it often.
Well, in brutal ways, too, for that matter.
In brutal ways, right. And so all the more reason, John, why it is the job of our schools, who are there to educate and to socialize our children, to be able to give children, young people, starting, I think, in the fourth grade all the way through high school, in various done in various ways at various levels, so it is age appropriate, giving them scientifically, medically accurate information about sex and sexuality. The fact that kids are being exposed to this in some ways earlier is all the more reason that the schools have to help. And parents, God bless them, parents often don't know how to deal with this subject with their children, or often don't deal with it in enough detail, and it takes somebody outside of the family to do that well.
I think these people, too, are being used by those that would like to destroy public education and move to charters as well. TUSD, and especially Tucson High School, has been the target of this legislature for the last decade or longer. I mean, it's always been a whipping boy for the ultra-right. And it's always been a focal point of the ultra-right. And it's always been pictured as, especially with Mexican-American studies, now with sex education, as a left-wing, pinko, bedwetting, pajama-clad, educational system. That's what it's been portrayed as. And people get something for that. They get a political agenda for that that goes far beyond sex education, in my opinion, David.
Well, yeah. But if you are targeted for something, one thing that I think progressives do often is they run away. Oh, my God, they're going to say bad things about me. Run away. Run away. Don't say that. They'll say terrible things. Don't say this. And so what you do is you cede the floor. You give up the floor to the conservatives, who then talk all the time, and progressives are afraid to challenge them. And so they're interpretation of the world becomes the most talked about interpretation. I think it's very important that progressives, whether it's sexuality or whether it's abortion or whether it's issues like taxation or the environment, get out there and shout, talk loudly, so people can say, it looks like there are two sides of this issue, and let them decide where they want to come down on this. Democrats have got to stop being frightened about saying anything that's controversial, while the Republicans are so controversial that they suck up all the oxygen, because that's news when you're controversial. And the only thing that's news when you're not controversial is the Democrats or the progressives don't have anything to say, so the conservatives say what they're saying for them. It's dangerous to run away from things you know are right.
By the way, how is this going to end at TUSD? What's going to happen, do you think?
Here's what I think should happen. Right now, there are three votes for the family life curriculum, as it's called, that are hard and fast votes. Adelita Grijalva, Layla Counts, and Crystal Foster are all a strong, hard yes. Mark, maybe. I don't know about the other two, but they've got three votes, 3-2. I think, John, if they keep on postponing this and compromising, they're compromising with themselves. They're giving these people more and more breathing room, more and more oxygen to push their ideas. Put it in. Get it through. Let them fight about it after it's there. That's fine. But they won't be able to fight at all the board meetings, and they won't be able to gin up all these people to get involved in trying to stop it once it's a fact. So vote for it. Next session, as soon as you can, as soon as you get together the things you needed to get together, vote for it. Get 3-2 or 4-1 or 5-0 or whatever it is, and put the thing in.
Do you think this will lead to further attrition of students and parents from TUES to TUSD, even though now it seems like it's turned around and you don't have this kind of flight from the district?
Well, I'm going to put that as a question. Why should it? Some parents will say, I don't want my children to be part of a district where other children are learning a certain kind of sex ed I dislike. But I think that's a small group of people. I don't think it's going to amount to many people. And most parents, I think, will say, well, my kid doesn't have to deal with it, so I'll keep them in TUSD. I don't think this will cause greater attrition. As I've said many times on your show and kind of disagreed with you about this, I don't think the attrition that's been in TUSD has been the fault of the board or the administration or the curriculum, but I think it's been factors outside of the district, such as population not increasing, such as charter schools, such as vouchers, and such as choice, which allows students to go to various other districts, that have created a natural flight, which is similar to the white flight in the 60s and 70s when people left the cities, a similar type of flight that is happening to districts all over the country and not just TUSD. I am not part of the blame TUSD crowd, and I never will be. Not that they do everything perfectly, but they're not the cause of the major loss of students.
David Safir, thanks so much for being on our show. You're a smart guy.
Thanks for listening to me, John.
You're more than welcome. I appreciate it. We'll talk again soon, I hope. Thank you. David Safir, longtime educator and education writer for The Weekly. We'll be back with Ed Ackerley, independent candidate for mayor, after these messages. This portion of the John C. Scott Talk Show originates from the Perfection Auto Works Studios. With us now, independent candidate for mayor of Tucson, here's Ed Ackerley. And Ed, welcome to the show. I'm so glad you could join us. Thank you so very much. And we've been talking about with Paul Cunningham and others during the show, police. We need more police officers. And Councilman Cunningham was saying, you fill up every academy, you still don't get enough. We're behind the eight ball, and we've been behind for quite some time, and it's going to take a while to catch up.
Yeah, I have an idea for that. I listened to a little bit of what Paul was saying, and I agree with him that the CSO program is a really good program to get some people doing some things. I think two other things that we could do immediately would be to switch some of the uniformed officers, commissioned officers, out of some of these clerical jobs that they're doing, data analysis and some other things internally with the department. Although those are important jobs, we could quickly translate those to civil service folks, people that are qualified but aren't a commissioned police officer, and do a better job of moving some of those 763 that we have left out onto the streets. And I had that conversation with a police officer just this afternoon at one of the events I was at, and that was kind of the topic of what we could do. How could we move some folks out there? And I have another idea for police that I think would be meaningful as well.
What is that?
Well, I think that, there's a lot of folks that are nearing retirement, and they get their 20 years in, 25 years, however they choose to, long they choose to serve, and then they have to sit out a year, kind of like the NC2A, if you will. They got to sit out a year. But then they're still a commissioned police officer in the state of Arizona. They keep their certification up. They could come back to the city of Tucson and help some of the younger guys in some of the shifts. And so I am thinking that we ought to be able to bring back a couple hundred guys that are retired who still have their commission to come in, not every single day and not a 40-hour shift every week, but to come back in and fill in the holes where need be on some shifts that are important, especially weekends and working with the younger officers to train them in the history of the great pride of blue that we've had in this city over many years. So in speaking with some of the officers that I've talked to this about, they think it's a great idea to bring back some retirees who are, they're in their early 50s, some of them, and they've got 10, 15 more years left in them, and there's no sense in us just sending them off. We can bring them back. They've already got their pension. They're already trained. They already have their commission.
I think there's the willingness on the part of a great many of those retirees to come back.
Oh, they would.
After,
I think
they take a look at retirement in the eye and they go, "Why, this is a little boring."
Yeah, and you know, these are young guys. These are not. We're not talking about older gentlemen. We're talking in ladies. We're talking about folks that are in their late 50s, maybe in early 60s, that could come back and be real good mentors for the younger crew that's coming through. And one of the problems we have is, as Councilman Cunningham was talking about, is even if we did fill up all three training classes and tried to get all those folks through the training, it just is not realistic. We're down to in the high 20s, maybe even the middle 20s, of who gets through the training class. And so you have a net loss every year. And so to reverse that trend of how many officers you have to do something unique and different. So CSOs, changing some of the folks out of the administrative positions and turn them into civil servants, and then move into the retirement side of things. I think we could mitigate the problem for at least for a couple of years as we try to build back up the force.
By the way, you have talked to every department head in the city. It took a while to get to all of them. This guy did his homework. He found out a little bit about what this job is all about. Found out what the city's all about. I don't think there's a city council candidate that I've ever talked with that met with every department head ever in running, and let alone a mayoral candidate. I mean, they just don't do that. But you've done the homework. What did you learn about this city that surprised you most?
Well, what was interesting about that is the fact that the other candidates for council and for mayor over the years haven't done what I did. And I you know, to me, I was just a normal thing to do. If you're applying for a job that involves oversight of a bunch of different departments in a city, I think it would make some sense that you kind of know what those departments are, what they do, who's running them, and what their needs and resources are that they are looking at. And so that in and of itself was a fantastic learning experience to be able to do that. And I'm not done with that. I'm still meeting with folks and going back and doing second and third visits with it. One of the unique things I think that was really, really exciting about that was, and I just used the 911 center as the example, is the fact of the duplication of effort that we have sometimes in both the county and the city. And the 911 center, we have two fully operational 911 centers, one with the county and one with the city. And in that particular case, redundancy is really important because in case one goes down, we have the other. But in many cases, there's a lot of redundancy in some areas that we could actually, business services is a good example. There's some places where we could do some justice courts where we could really maybe, you know, I'm not talking about doing away with any department. I'm talking about sharing resources with intergovernmental agreements. And you know, parks is a good example of with the county and the city. You know, we've got a lot of parks to take care of. The county has a lot of area to take care of. If we could position some folks on different sides of the city so that they could work together in that regard, I think that's a good use of resources for both organizations. And it's that creative thinking, I think, that has come out of those meetings of what can we do to give you more resources and make your job as a leader of one of these divisions easier for you to do and better for the folks that work for you.
Yeah, I've been complimentary to the city council about how well it's been run, with the voters saying yes to more tax money for roads, more tax money for parks. What they failed at was combining the city, county, municipal courts building with the Superior Courts building and the county complex downtown. Our municipal court system is deplorable. It's a filthy mess. You want to go pay a ticket down there and sit in line for six damn hours or whatever the hell it is, you might as well be in a sewer. I'm not kidding. It's that bad. Go to one of the restrooms there. You will not forget it soon. Why can't we clean that up?
You will not get a ticket because you don't want to go back down there.
No, maybe that's part of the punishment.
Maybe it's a deterrent, yeah.
I'm not sure, but the point is that we can do better.
Yeah, part of that obviously has been funding over the last few years, not having enough money to go around to pay for all the services that we need, and part of that goes back to the priority of the budget, which I have read the budget cover to cover a couple of times, trying to get my hands around where can we reallocate resources to make some things a little bit more affordable. And you know, it has to do with setting priorities and being able to take a look at that and say, what things are we as a city council and mayor supposed to be doing, and then setting your agenda from that, not what we would like to be doing. It's kind of like having a mortgage. You know, when you have a mortgage and you've got expenses for a household, you don't take a three-week vacation that you can't afford if you can't pay the bills for the mortgage and for the utilities and for the necessities of the house. You wait and take that vacation when the money is there. And we've sometimes have spent some money on some things that perhaps we should have been spending on the core of services that our city needs and our residents are expecting.
I put it this way, spending money we didn't have to buy things we didn't need to impress people we didn't like.
Exactly. That's a great line.
let me take a quick break.
Sure.
I support you for mayor. I think people would make a terrible, tragic mistake if they elected Regina Romero to be mayor of Tucson. She's a nice lady, great mom, great mother, a nice person, but she's going to be a horrible mayor. We have a chance to elevate Tucson to a very high level of administration if you elect Ed Ackerley as the mayor of Tucson. I'll be back and let him have some concluding thoughts and appeal to you about why you should vote for him for mayor. Independent candidate for mayor, Ed Ackerley, back after this. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Political Forum. With me is Ed Ackerley, independent candidate for mayor, one of the most informed and qualified people to ever seek the office of mayor in our city. And I've followed the politics of this town for 50 years. I know what the hell I'm talking about. Let's talk about why you got in this race, what you bring to the table, why you think it's important for people to vote for you.
I just think people need to look around at the roads, need to look around at the lack of police officers, look around at the response times of what the police are facing right now. It's not their fault. They just don't have enough officers. We had to go out and pass a $225 million bond because we weren't taking care of the parks with the regular maintenance. And you watch that as a citizen growing up here, you know, how can I help? How can I jump in and make a difference? And so that was the motivating factor. I think that all of us take a look at how we're living and what kind of a city we're living in, and we all want to make it better. And I want to also add my marketing expertise, because even though we are facing some mammoth problems, we also live in a pretty cool town. And we need to start telling each other what are the good things about Tucson and not always talk about all the terrible things that are going on. So the reason I jumped in was to make a difference and to make the city a little bit better than it is now, and do what we can for my grandkids who are 5 and 7. What's their little city going to look like in probably be a big, giant metropolis in 50 years? What's it going to look like? And what did we do in 2019 and 2020 to make it better?
You know, let's talk a little bit. I heard your father, who is 90?
90, almost 97
because
now.
I remember many, many years ago. I've been here 50 years doing broadcasting, and I remember him when he was first kind of starting this agency of yours. He's a remarkable individual, so alert.
He's going to love it that I gave out his age over the air, so he's going to love that.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to ask you that, but I was thinking, you know, he's a senior citizen, that's for sure.
Yeah. Still works every day, still plugging away.
Well, talk about the Ackerley family. He did. Why don't you talk about it?
Well, what he talked about is true. My folks came here, and they came over the hill, and my mom said, this is the place we want to live. My dad's lived in the family home there for about 62 years, and they raised 7 children. I'm the youngest of 7, and we had 23 foster kids that came through our little house when I was a young kid, and then they opened up the agency when I was 10, and we've been going strong for 51 years. And I got some brothers, I got a sister that lives in Portland now, but we've all been around Tucson for a long time and made a contribution here, and it's a real honor. I said this at the forum the other night. I was really sincere about it. I stood up and said, it's an honor to run for mayor of my city, and it's a privilege to be able to go through this process and see the wonderful things that are going on in the city of Tucson, and talking to all those department heads and seeing what the things we can do together if we all jump in together. So it's been a real blessing, to be honest with you.
And you get to meet a lot of people you didn't know. They know you, it seems like.
What's
you didn't
amazing,
know them.
I was just in the park just a little bit ago with thousands of people, and it's amazing.
What's
how
the big
many,
deal over there? Did I miss something?
Well, it's the 47th annual Pride Weekend kind of thing over there. So there's good. Holy smokes, there's about 10,000 people there. And then, of course, the Greek Festival is this weekend, and then we got a U of A football game tonight with UCLA. So it's a pretty busy weekend, as they typically are, and in the fall in Tucson. So a lot going on, but it's been a great experience.
Well, it's going to be, I think, an experience that you're going to take with you all your life. I don't know how this race is going to come out. People say, oh, well, the Democrats have got so many more people registered as Democrats, and it's an uphill battle. But you've never given up on this.
Well,
you've always said, look, I'm in this race.
They keep saying that it's going to be a historical election because, you know, that they want to say that's because the first Latina is going to be elected mayor of the city. I say it's a historical race because it's the first time in history, first independent ever. And I think that's a significant shift in the movement of our government and our governance of our city. So I'm looking forward to that challenge.
What's coming up? Do you have any forums that people can attend?
Well, we've got one coming up in mid-October with at El Rio. But you know, I'm looking forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks. I want to do something with you and see if we can get a bunch of folks that are supporting me on the air to talk
about
that.
We'll take the show over to your office at the DoubleTree.
I would love to see that and get some folks on the air that have helped us in this, and both from the Democratic and the Republican side. There's a large swath of people from both sides, as well as the independents. So it's been a great, great, great group of people.
We thank you for being on the air with us. Thank you for running, Ed. We'll look forward to the rest of this campaign. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ed Ackerley, independent candidate for mayor. I want to thank Mo Goldman, immigration lawyer. Rudy Garcia, starting his own party, We the People. And Dr. Stephen Zunis, the University of San Francisco. Paul Cunningham, Ward 2 city council person. David Sevier, our education expert. And Ed Ackerley. Thanks for being with us on this soiree on a Saturday afternoon. The Politics of Southern Arizona. Now in our 31st year of continuous political talk, this has been the John C. Scott Show. This show, portion of the John C. Scott Show, originates from the Perfection Auto Work Studios. Thanks for listening.